Holy smokes, everybody. It's Adam doing that intro thing that Adams have got to do because, dadgummit, someone's got to do it. This interview is an interview that Joel and I did with, as it says above, Bob McLeod. We did this interview about a year ago, and through a series of events, it got buried and lost. I thought it was lost for good until I was looking for another interview that I had also lost, or thought I had lost, and ended up coming across the Bob McLeod interview. We did this, I guess, last year, right around the time that I was, I believe there was a wedding or something, occupying quite a bit of my thought and time, but that's in the past, about a year in the past, actually, and I bring to you the Bob McLeod interview. And, you know, enjoy.
Thank you so much, Adam. So, Bob, what are we doing tonight?
Well, this moment, I was teaching all day, actually. I teach as an adjunct at a local art college 2 days a week. So today I was teaching anatomy all day and got home and had dinner, just had a piece of pie, and now I'm just relaxing.
Which school do you teach at?
The Pennsylvania College of Art and Design in Lancaster.
What do you teach there?
It rotates my schedule. I teach three-hour labs. So on Wednesdays, I teach 10 to 1 and then 2 to 5. And Thursday, the same thing. But on Thursdays, I teach anatomy, both periods. And on Wednesdays, it's electives. And I teach sometimes sequential art, sometimes graphic novels, sometimes perspective, sometimes, believe it or not, wildlife illustration, and what's the other? There's one more. Oh, the figure in motion.
Now, how did you get hooked up with that, being a comic book artist? How did you go from that to being a teacher?
For years, I've wanted to teach. I thought about doing it, 15, 20 years ago, and I was just so busy working in comics. And in the 2000s, my comic book work at least, slowed down considerably. After every job, I was not automatically getting another job from the same editor. So I'd have to call around, you know, looking for work, which I hadn't done, you know, pretty much since I started my career. And I was getting work. I was working still steadily, but it was just a hassle every time I finished a job, lining up another job. So I started once again looking for other things other than comics to do, and my wife ran into a man she knew who was teaching at the College of Art and Design and asked him about it, and he said, yeah, I should give him a call, so I did. So that's where the wildlife class came in. At that time, they only needed someone to teach the wildlife illustration course, and you know, I said, well, you know, that's not really my specialty. I'm not a wildlife artist. I mean, I like drawing animals, but, you know, he said, well, that's the only opening we have right now. Take it or leave it. And I said, I'll give it a try, you know, if you're willing. So I did, and it went well. And then they liked me and offered me these other classes, you know, the following semester.
Well, now, you said that you hadn't had to call hadn't really had to call around since you first started. When did you get started in comics?
I started in 1974. I showed Neil Adams my portfolio, and he picked up the phone. I had been knocking on Marvel and DC's door for 3 months, couldn't get anywhere. Neil picked up the phone and called John Verporten, who was the production manager at Marvel at that time, and said, I got somebody here who has some lettering potential, and got me a job just on his recommendation working in the production department at Marvel.
Now, that was, let's see, was that the Krusty Bunker? Is that right?
Well, that was later. After I was working in production for about a year, I started, you know, being in the office there. I was around the editors and showing them my samples and started getting some freelance inking work. Mike Esposito had suggested that I could pick up inking faster than I could pick up penciling, even though at the time I didn't even know what inking was. I was just wanting to do something in comics, and it just assumed I would pencil and ink my own stuff or whatever. I didn't really ever even think about people inking other people. I was a Mad Magazine fan. I wasn't really a comic book fan, so I didn't know all that much about the business. And you know, I started learning as soon as I got into the production department. you know, I would see the jobs that inkers had done. And so then I started thinking about it, and Mike suggested that I give it a try, so I started trying to learn how to ink. And then I got a studio at Neil's studio, Continuity Studios, and anybody that worked at Neil's studio could ink the jobs that he got in for the Krusty Bunkers. He would tell Marvel, for example, that he was too busy to ink the whole job himself, but he had these other artists in the studio, and he would supervise it and make sure it met a certain standard. And so anybody that walked into his door could ink a panel or a background or whatever, and that's how I got into the Krusty Bunker inking.
Now, that was, didn't Joe Rubenstein also come out of that?
Yeah, Joe Rubenstein was kind of the office gopher at Continuity Studios when I got there. He was only about 16 or 17 years old, and already becoming a good inker, but not trying to get work professionally. He started about a few months after I did, I think, started inking professionally.
Now, I read somewhere that you said that drawing, I guess, kind of came easily to you. Wasn't really that hard. What kind of training have you had?
Well, when I said drawing came easily to me, I could draw when I was 4. I could draw better than my parents. I just have an inborn ability to see spatial relationships and make the pencil go where I want it to go. So I've always been able to look at something and draw it. You know, it's just easy for me. I teach it now to other people, and it's just, I'm always amazed at how difficult it is because it comes easily to me. I mean, you know, there's people that singing comes easily to, or playing basketball comes easily to, and drawing just comes easily to me. But drawing is different than penciling, you know, because penciling involves storytelling and all kinds of different disciplines like set design and perspective and anatomy and all these various things that go into telling a story with pictures. So I had to learn all that stuff either in art school. I went to art school a while, college for a while, and taught myself a lot. But just plain drawing has, you know, I've just always been able to do it.
What made you decide you wanted to be a comic artist?
I was working at a grocery store when I was about 21 or so, and a friend of mine at the grocery store, fellow worker, was a comic book fan, and he saw my cartoons that I was doing, my Mad Magazine-style cartoons, and he said, oh, you got to be drawing comic books. You got to be drawing superheroes. You know, you'd be great. And I had never even really thought about drawing comic books. I was more thinking about having my own newspaper comic strip or going to work for Mad or maybe Disney or, you know, I didn't know advertising. I didn't know what. But when he suggested comics, it sounded cool. I said, well, yeah, I'll give that a try. And I thought, you know, at that time, I had never heard a negative word about my art. You know, everybody just kept praising me all the time. So I had this really overinflated ego about how great I was and figured I could do anything. And, you know, so I said, yeah, I'll do comics for a while. And then I went up to New York, and, you know, everybody I met could draw better than I could. And I just got rejected one time. Everywhere I went, people were rejecting me and wouldn't even look at my work. And when they looked at it, they didn't like it. And, you know, it was quite a shock.
So what was your first professional job then?
Well, I started production, my first freelance art job, let me think. Pat Broderick and I started out doing gray tones on the black and white magazines, Marvel's black and white magazines. We would add gray tones to other artists' work. And then my very first inking jobs were inking in those black and white, like, Kung Fu magazines. I think a Don Heck job was my very first job, a jungle story, and it was never printed. They paid me for it, but it was never printed.
In addition to being a inker, you're also a, you know, a pretty accomplished penciler. Which do you prefer to do?
I like doing both, really. I love inking. It's a wonderful art form, and I love penciling, too. So whenever I can, I like to do both, and all through my career, I've done both. When I did only inking, it was really because they were just constantly offering me inking jobs, and I seemed to have a facility for inking. It just came easily to me, and I enjoyed it, and I could make more money at it because I was faster at inking than I was at penciling. And so I ended up doing a lot of inking, mainly for those reasons. But I've always been drawing, you know, between inking jobs, and I had a few series, penciling series, and never really thought of myself as an inker so much as everybody else seems to think of me as an inker.
Like, so we did a interview with Joe Rubenstein back in December, and I kind of wanted to ask you the same question I asked him, which is, what do you see the job of an inker being? How do you approach a job?
Well, it's changed so much since I got started in the 70s. You know, pencils used to be so loose. The penciler would basically do the storytelling and leave everything else up to the inker. Not all of them, but a lot of the pencilers just didn't have that much of a finished style to their pencils. So the inker would add blacks, he would fix up the anatomy, he would fix the perspective, he would find the one line out of like five lines that needed to be there. He would choose where to put feathering, where not to put feathering, where to put detail, where not to put detail. It was really a collaboration, whereas today, pencilers who grew up looking at what Joe did and what I did and what Klaus Janson did and Tom Palmer, we were adding so much to the pencils. Today's pencilers, when they looked at that, just assumed that all that was in the pencils. And so they started doing everything we were doing, the inks, they started putting into their pencils. And so now that they've grown up and entered the business, pencils already have all this stuff in them, and they're so tight. Inking has become, you know, what was a joke a few years ago about inkers being tracers has pretty much come to pass, and a large percentage of the job now is just tracing.
Now, do you think that started with all those superstars in the late 80s, like Todd McFarlane and Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee?
Yeah, the image guys, pretty much. They were the ones I'm thinking of who brought all that, you know, stuff into the pencils.
I know that you worked with Todd McFarlane, and that really wasn't a very pleasant experience, I don't think. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. When I inked Todd, he was starting out on, first I inked him on, what was that second? I think I inked him, that's how it happened. I inked him on Spitfire, if you know who Spitfire was, some robotic character. And Terry had been inking him, I think, or somebody else, and I said, well, I'm going to ink this just as much as I can like Terry Austin. And so I did this really detailed, ornate inking job the way I pictured Terry inking it, and Todd loved it, you know. So he said, yeah, I want this guy inking me on Spider-Man. But the problem was the Spitfire job, I wasn't interested in making money on. I was just trying to ink like Terry and have a good time. And then when he asked me to do Spider-Man, it was breakdowns, and with breakdowns, the inker normally gets more money, but he wasn't calling them breakdowns. He was calling them finished pencils. So he was basically asking me to take very rough, loose pencils and spend a lot of time finishing them up for no extra money, you know. And so I said, well, I'm not going to do that every month. I just eliminated all of his rendering. And just kind of inked it very simply and quickly. I mean, it looked nice, but it didn't have any of that Todd McFarlane line work everywhere that the fans love. And at the time, he wasn't a big star, and I didn't know he was going to become a big star. And, you know, it was just a job, and I was trying to make money. And to him, it was the start of his, you know, rise to fame.
Well, when you approach a job now, I know that you said that, you know, they tend to pencil rather tightly these days. How do you approach a job? Do you see it? Do you try to put your stamp on it now when you ink somebody? Or do you try to just enhance what's there? How do you see your job has changed?
Well, I'm a commercial artist, so my job is to please the client, basically, or I should be going and doing oil paintings of landscapes or something. So Marvel's hiring me to do a job, so I have to do the job in a way that's going to please Marvel, and that might include tracing, or it might include making changes and taking over more. It depends what they're looking for. So like on the job I'm doing right now, I'm inking Al Rio on a New Mutants miniseries, and Al Rio's pencils are very tight, so there's no reason for me to go in and start making a lot of changes, because they're very happy with the way he's penciling. And he's got every feathering line there. He's got every black there. He's, you know, they could pretty much print from the pencils. So I'm just happy that they're not printing from the pencils. And so I'm making some subtle changes here and there, just things that probably no one would even notice, including Al Rio. Maybe, I don't know. We'll find out. But I'm not out there to try to really put my stamp on it because I don't think that's what they're looking for.
How do you feel about when people ink your stuff? Because you're also a penciler. I guess other people have to ink your stuff sometimes.
Yeah, I've never found an inker that I think has worked that well over my stuff. And I've always kind of been puzzled why, because I can do really tight pencils and have, and even when I do that, it hasn't worked out. I've had my favorite inker in the world, Tom Palmer, who I learned a lot of my style from, inked my pencils on Star Wars. And as much as I love his inking, I didn't love him. I loved parts of it, but I didn't love it overall on my pencils. He made changes to my faces, to my lighting, and it did just seem to me, and I know a lot about inking, they seem like arbitrary changes that didn't improve it. Now, there were a lot of changes that he made that did improve it, and I loved those. You know, so I say that there's a lot that he did that I liked. Rubenstein inked me, kind of the same thing. A lot that I really liked, but a lot of changes that I didn't like. Brett Breeding, very good inker, just didn't mesh on my pencils. It's strange. I think it's because I don't draw the way the average comic book artist draws, because I didn't learned to draw from comics. I learned to draw from Mad Magazine. And I put subtle things in my drawing, like I'll draw a nose a certain way, and I want it to be that way. I don't want it just to be a standard, average comic book face. A lot of comic book artists will have the same face, and they'll just change the hair color, or they'll, you know, change the length of the hair, or it's the same face, you know? And they only know how to do one chin, or one nose, or one mouth, or one eye, or whatever, and I learned to draw from Mort Drucker, who did caricatures of all these different celebrities, and every face I draw is an individual. It's not a stereotype. And so I think comic book inkers just don't get that. You know, they're just looking to do the same thing they do all the time, and that's just not how I draw. I mean, it seems to me to be the reason, but I don't really know why. You know, I just never could find the right inker.
Well, I mean, I know you are really known for putting, for differentiating between your characters. I know that when you were doing the New Mutants, you know, Sam Guthrie did not have the same as Bobby. You know, very distinct. He was very lanky, and you went to great pains, I think, to show that. Every character was, you know, very unique.
Yeah, exactly. When I was drawing the New Mutants, I deliberately made Sam this gawky guy with big ears and a big hook nose, and I made Danny kind of flat-chested, and I made Rain kind of full-figured and short, and, you know, each one of them had all these distinctive traits in their body as well as their face. And I saw a New Mutants miniseries a year or two ago, and suddenly Roberto was as tall as Sam and built like a football linebacker, and so was Sam, and their noses were the same, and their ears were the same, and their eyes were the same, and their, you know, Roberto had curly hair, and Sam had long, straight hair, but that was, you know, pretty much the only difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's, like I say, they just draw these stereotypes with different hair, you know. It doesn't, it's just not the way I like to draw. I like to draw the subtle differences between people, to me, is what makes us interesting.
Well, because you put so much effort into differentiating the characters, does it take you longer to do a page than let's say, the average penciler?
I don't think so, because that kind of stuff doesn't really slow you down. What slows me down is the layout, you know, because there's so many different ways you can depict a scene. You know, are you going to do a down shot or an up shot or a close up or a long shot? Where are you going to position the arm or the leg? How are you going to turn the body? That kind of stuff. There's so many decisions to make and so many choices. Again, because I didn't grow up reading comics, I don't have a lot of those things at hand. I have to stop and think. Whereas if you've read 6 million comics and you've seen all these different layouts and ways of storytelling, it kind of subconsciously gets into your head, and something will spring to your mind automatically that I have to stop and think, and it might just take me a few minutes longer than the average comic book artist, because I'm just not as absorbed in the culture of comics as the average comic book penciler.
Being that you're not really into the comics culture, but you obviously have done a lot of comics work, I guess, do you think that that's helped, if nothing else, differentiate your style?
Probably, and maybe not in a good way. You know, maybe I would have been more successful and more popular in comics if I wasn't, if I was more stereotypical in those ways, because, you know, I was never even really that much of a superhero fan. My real interest was in all the other genres, like westerns and sci-fi and fantasy and romance even, and just all these other things that comics used to do other than superheroes. I mean, I like superheroes fine. They're, you know, I don't have anything against them per se. That's not really where my interest is. My interest is more in humor. I started out, like I say, for Mad Magazine, and some of my first work at Marvel was for Marvel's Crazy Magazine, which was their imitation Mad Magazine. And that was really my favorite work from my career, doing movie satires for them, and I did a strip called The Teen Hulk. You know, that's what I enjoy doing. And recently I did a children's book, a superhero alphabet book that was published by HarperCollins, that's just, you know, silly superheroes. And that's really what I enjoy doing.
I really wanted to save that more towards the end, but you brought it up. Tell us about Superhero ABC.
Since I got married, I married a woman whose mother really looked down on comics and didn't like her reading comics when she was a kid. I can't imagine what she first said when my wife told her she was going to marry a comic book artist. But she was always kind of saying, well, why don't you do a children's book? And I was always interested in children's books. There's some great, fantastic art in children's books, and I always thought it'd be great to do one. But I was just too busy in comics. So again, once my work started slowing down a little bit in the 2000s, I started thinking about doing a children's book. And I was just thinking and thinking about it. I mean, there's so many different kinds you can do, and I just couldn't decide what to do, what kind of book to do. And my wife was just getting really frustrated with me, and she said, you know so much about superheroes, just do a superhero alphabet book. I said, hey, that's a pretty good idea. I said, I can't believe I didn't think of that, and I can't believe no one else has already thought of that, so I said I better do it before somebody beats me to it. I have never written anything in my life before that. I don't know why I decided to take a shot at writing it myself. I think just because it was such a good idea, I didn't want somebody else to do it. So I took a shot at it and started trying to come up with a different superhero for every letter of the alphabet, which is not as easy as you might think, because, you know, they've been doing superheroes for decades, and there's thousands of them out there, and everything I came up with was already copyrighted. So that was probably the biggest challenge, was just trying to come up with something original, and not only one original superhero, but 26 of them. Then I decided, since it's an alphabet book, you know, I'm trying to teach kids the alphabet book, alliteration would be a good thing. So the more A's on a page, the better to help them learn the letter A. So I used alliteration and put some little, what I considered at least comical asides in there. Like on my B character was Bubble Man, and I wrote, he's bald and he wears boots, you know, and stuff like that, and just being silly. And I sent it off to 5 publishers, and 4 publishers never even sent me a rejection letter, and I haven't heard a word from them. But the 5th publisher, the editor at HarperCollins, has a little 5-year-old son, and she said, oh, this would be perfect for my son. He really likes superheroes, and this would be a way to get him interested in reading. And so she was really excited about it, and it took off from there.
How long did that take you to finish?
They wanted me to do it in 6 months, and I tried my best. I was working constantly, day and night, every waking moment on that book, but I couldn't finish it in 6 months. From start to finish, it was about 8 months.
Wow.
Okay.
And I could have easily spent a year on it, but, you know, they were pushing me to get it finished, and right up until the end, I was revising it, rewriting pages, totally restarting over entire pages. But, you know, I just reached the point where I had to get it in or would have messed up their schedule.
Now, that's had some pretty good reviews, though, right?
Yeah, I got 2-starred reviews. I don't know how many sales you need to be a bestseller. It wasn't a bestseller, but it got very good reviews. Still is getting good reviews. Still selling well after 4 years. I did it back in 2006, and I've been very happy with it. It's been put in paperback. Barnes & Noble did a special edition of it, their own version. I mean, it's the same book, but they just, I guess, have some kind of deal where they make their own edition of it. So it's a hardcover, but without a dust jacket, and it's for the same price as the HarperCollins paperback. So it's a really good deal, and that's doing well. I mean, so there's three versions out, and all three of them are doing well, you know, after 4 years, so it's been great.
Well, now, you've done the children's books. Now, as far as commissions, I know that... you know, you do quite a few commissions. How many do you think you do in the course of a year?
Well, for a while there, I was doing about 50 or 60 a year for like 3 years in a row, maybe. But then I started teaching, and I started editing rough stuff for tomorrow's publications, and that really cut into my time, and I just didn't have as much time for commissions anymore. So in the last 2 or 3 years, maybe half that many. Or I mean, I haven't counted them, but I would think 20 to 30 over the year. But now since I quit editing rough stuff, that ended last year, I've had a little more time. But then I've been writing all these children's books that I was and trying to sell them. And I started teaching more. I was teaching one day a week. Now I'm teaching 2 days a week and still not back up to doing 50 or 60. So I love doing commissions, but it's like a one shot. So if I get something that's going to keep me busy for a few months, I have to prioritize that and do the commissions around those things.
What do most people ask for as far as commissions? Is it mainly people asking for New Mutants or Spider-Man? Or?
Well, that's one thing I like about commissions. It really varies quite a bit. I've done oil paintings. I've done little sketches of Spider-Man. I've done drawings of buildings. I've done... all kinds of different things, animals, people's kids as a superhero, just a great variety. A lot of it's penciling, a lot of it's inking, a lot of it's both. So it's always something different. So I really can't even tell you what most people ask for because there's not any one thing.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever been asked to draw?
Too weird to talk about, really. There's some weird people out there.
You obviously haven't listened to our podcast, have you?
Yeah, there's some kinky people out there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't think I want to get into it. There's some strange stuff. But I don't do all that.
You can,
the, all
you
the
can almost
stuff.
Hear him turning red over the phone, can't you?
That's right, yeah.
Well, do you turn people down when they ask for stuff like that?
Yeah, I won't... I'm trying to remember if I've told anybody that's just too weird. I prefer not to do nudity even, mm-hmm. especially recently because I'm doing these children's books. And yeah. It's, you know, I don't want people who buy my children's book to go to my website and see all these nude women. So yeah. I'll do nudity in on certain occasions, but I try not to do anything that I wouldn't want to show my daughter, for example.
Okay. That's a good rule.
And my daughter's 24.
Still a good room.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, what does it generally cost for a commission from you? Let's say just like a one-figure kind of one-figure.
Pencil and ink?
Yeah.
Or just pencil. Pencil and ink for a single figure is usually around 100.
Oh, so you're very reasonable.
I think so, yeah.
Well, then I'll go ahead and send you an email next week with what I want. What's the lead time?
Well, you have to get in line. I've got like 40 people waiting.
So I'll get around, what, 2012?
About a three-year waiting list, yeah.
Wow.
And I hate to, I don't take money up front. You know, I tell them, don't give me any money until I'm ready to start on it. But seriously, I've got about 40 or 50 people on my commission list that I would love to get to, but I'm just too busy doing other stuff.
Well, now, you started out mainly at Marvel. Let me go back a little bit. You started mainly at Marvel. Were you in the Marvel offices in the 70s and 80s?
Yeah.
Did you spend a lot of time there, or did you work mainly from home?
In the 70s, I spent a lot of time there.
What was it like there during the 70s? I mean, I'm assuming Stan Lee was still roaming around, and
yes,
was there
was.
A lot
it
of
was
just
wonderful.
Free traffic coming in and out?
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was such a friendly atmosphere. It was a family atmosphere. I mean, the Marvel, the people that worked in the Marvel office really felt like a family. It was just so, such a warm atmosphere. You could go walk right into Stan's office and talk to him. You could hang around the editors and shoot the breeze and just be there when something came in that needed penciling or inking. Say, hey, here I am, I'll do it. And unfortunately, you could walk right into the storeroom, pick up a stack of original art and walk out of the office with it, which is what some people did.
No.
And so it's since become very corporate. You've got to have a reservation, what do you call it, a appointment to talk to a certain editor. Once you talk to that editor, you pretty much shoot out of there. You can't just hang around. And, you know, it's just not, it's all business.
Do you think that's for the better or for the worse?
Well, I mean, I can see why it's come to that. It's hard to say if it's for the better or worse. It's just, all I know is it's not as fun as it used to be. It's not as friendly as it used to be. It's colder and more corporate, whereas it used to be kind of like just a small business. Money, people were hoping to make money, but there wasn't big money being made for the most part. Like John Buscema was the big shot at that time. He was making a good salary because he could draw 5 pages a day, you know, not
wow.
because each page was a marvel. I mean, they were very nice pages, but he worked volume. Jack Kirby worked volume because that's the only way they could make money. Whereas now, artists will spend a week on a single page and they get a decent page rate, but then they really make their money when they sell the original art. Mm. You know, and Jack Kirby didn't even get back most of his original art. And even Stan Lee, at the time, he was making a good salary for sure, but, you know, wasn't rolling in millions of dollars. You know, there just weren't all these millions of dollars in movies and everything where money really dictated everything. It just seemed like they were doing stuff because more, I mean, you know, they were, I'm sure there was a bottom line that kind of dictated stuff even back then, but it was so much more stuff was done just because they wanted to do it, just because they liked Monster Comics, they did Monster Comics, they, you know.
Well, now let me ask you about Stan Lee. Now, is he off camera? Is he the same on camera as he is off camera? Is he always Stan Lee, or is that just kind of an act that he pulls?
Oh, no, that's no act. I mean, I'm sure Stan has moods like anybody else and can be sullen or whatever, but Stan is exactly the way you think he is. Off camera, I mean, he's a friendly guy, he's a funny guy, he's Stan Lee. We used to have a Marvel softball team that we played in Central Park in the 70s, and he pitched at one or two of our softball games.
Wow. Well, what about Jack Kirby? Did you get to hang around the King very much?
I never met Jack. I think he was already on the West Coast when I got into the business. I didn't. I don't remember ever hearing about him being around.
Well, let me ask you what you think your best as an inker. Now, I always enjoyed when you went over Buscema's Conan. I thought that was some of your best work as far as inking. What do you think your best work is?
Well, I love hearing you say that because that was my favorite inking work. I loved inking John Buscema's pencils because I inked his breakdowns, which were pretty much connect the dots. They were the loosest drawings you can imagine. I don't know if you've ever seen any of them. They're extremely loose. And it's basically just he's giving you the storytelling, the layout, and everything else about it is up to the inker, which, you know, was great for me because the hardest thing for me was to do the layouts and the storytelling because, like I say, I had never read that many comics at that time. And I knew how to finish it, or I knew the way I wanted to finish it, but I struggled over my layouts and the dynamic poses. When I first started penciling, I had a real hard time getting that dynamic style, Marvel style, because, you know, I was a Mad Magazine artist, or, you know, that was my influence. So it was just wonderful inking his pencils.
Are you saying that when you moved to penciling, you kind of based your storytelling ability on Buscema?
Yeah. When I was learning to do superhero comics, the top artists in the business were Neil Adams and John Buscema, as far as I could tell. And so I said, well, why not try to draw like John Buscema and Neil Adams? So I really studied a lot of their work, and I took a Conan comic, and no matter what the Conan figure, what size the Conan figure was in the comic, I took every single Conan figure in the comic book, copied it onto a sheet of paper, and I made each little figure about 2 inches tall. Just to learn how he was posing his figures, where he was putting the arms, how he was twisting the torso. I didn't put any details in. It was just, that's why I did him only 2 inches tall, just to get the pose, to help me learn how he did his dynamic poses. And so I would study his layout. I would study where he put things in his panels, what he put in, what he didn't put in, what angles he would show it from, which is pretty much what he did with Jack Kirby. You know, if you look at Buscema's early stuff, he was much more like a newspaper strip artist, and Marvel wanted him to do what Jack Kirby was doing, so he just analyzed what Jack Kirby was doing, and in the same way I analyzed what Neil and what John Buscema were doing.
Do you think your art's improved over the years, your storytelling ability?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I first started, I just didn't know anything about storytelling. I would just do what came to mind. Usually you're on a really tight deadline, so I didn't have enough time to really think it through, plan out my page layouts all that much. I think I'm really a lot better now than I ever was at the height of my career. I know I'm a better inker now. My anatomy's better. My storytelling's better. Now that I'm teaching, I'm having to teach all this stuff, and when you start teaching something, you really have to learn it yourself. So I've actually learned stuff teaching it to other people that's made me a better artist.
I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah, well, teaching's great for that. You know, when you have to teach perspective, I thought I really had perspective down, and I was one of the few artists that do, I think. If you look through comics, there's all kinds of dreadful perspective in there. I would say 1 in 20 artists, no perspective.
Yeah.
And I thought I knew it until I started teaching it, and then I discovered a lot about it that I had never even thought about before. So now I really know perspective, and same with anatomy. I knew where the muscles were pretty well, but, you know, and actually I used to think I knew anatomy too well, that it was actually hindering, like, being able to draw Spider-Man. If you try to draw him like a real person, it doesn't work, because he gets into poses that the human body can't get into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I would always try to make him, his anatomy, work, whereas, you know, Todd McFarlane would just put him however he wanted and didn't even worry about it. And I'm not saying it didn't look cool, because it did, but it wasn't real anatomy.
People love the Todd McFarlane.
And so having to teach muscles and bones to my students, I really had to learn it myself. So, you know, it's really made me much better.
Now, I've heard from several artists when they got in there, you know, they spent all these years learning the human body and learning this and that. And then when they started in a comics, they pretty much just had to throw that right out the window. Do you think that's true, or do you?
Only in the sense that I just said. I mean, there's some things, if you look at Superman, the way he's generally drawn, or the average superhero, their shoulders are bigger than their triceps. You know what the tricep is, the muscle on the back of your arm?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a bodybuilder who's, you know, Mr. Universe or whatever, his triceps are twice the size of his shoulders. It's a more streamlined anatomy. It's a more graceful Tarzan-style anatomy as opposed to Conan-style anatomy. If you look at John Buscema's Conan as compared to his Tarzan, you'll see what I mean. And we do things like draw the head deliberately smaller in comics to make the body appear more massive. We draw the hands bigger to make them look more powerful. You know, we deliberately manipulate anatomy for our own purposes, but we don't throw it out the window. If you don't know anatomy to begin with, and there are successful artists who didn't, who still became pretty successful, I don't think it works as well, though.
You talk about all these tricks when it comes to drawing superheroes. You don't get a more iconic and perfect superhero than Superman, who I know you moved over to DC and worked on. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was down in Florida. I moved down to Florida around 1979 because it was getting too expensive to live in New York, and I was getting steady work. Just thought I should buy a house, and I couldn't afford to buy a house in New York. So I moved down to Florida, and being that far away from the Marvel office at that time, I mean, it's changed since then, but at that time, most people were around New York that were working in comics, and I got just kind of removed from what was happening, you know, what was the changes that happen every year in the industry and all the subtle stuff. And I just pretty much was started taking whatever jobs they sent me rather than picking and choosing advantageous jobs for my career. And it got to a point where my career was just not going where I wanted it to go. I was doing all inking and no penciling, and I was inking books I didn't want to be inking. So I figured I really needed to rejuvenate my career, and we moved back up to New York in 89, I think. So about 10 years I was in Florida. So we moved back up, and kind of right after I moved up there, I inked a Cary Gamble Superman job as a fill-in. And I don't remember how I got that, but for whatever reason, I inked that, and they really liked it. And Jerry Ordway was penciling Superman at the time, and he said, you know, Bobby, you really should do more penciling, because he liked my New Mutant stuff. And I said, well, I'd like to do more penciling. And so he suggested me to the editor for one of the Superman books, because an opening came up. And so they gave me a shot, and, you know, that was great.
Well, no, I'm trying to think of how to ask this question and not have it come out wrong. So forgive me when I ask this, but you stated many times in this interview and in others that, you know, you never really followed comics much and you were more of a mad guy. I mean, did it hit you that you're doing Superman? You were doing the iconic superhero character. I mean, did it ever fully hit you that what you were doing?
Somewhat. Superman was the main comic book I read when I was a kid. I read, my sister would buy Archie's and I would buy Superman, and we'd, you know, swap them back and forth. I missed the whole Marvel revolution. I didn't read any of those Ditko Spider-Mans or the John Romita Spider-Mans or the Jack Kirby Thors. I mean, I just missed all the 60s Marvel comics because I was reading Mad Magazine, and I was reading Superman as a kid, and as wonderful as his art was, I just didn't like Kurt Swan's artwork. It just wasn't. If you put Kurt Swan up to Mort Drucker, the things that Kurt Swan excels in, as opposed to the things that Mort Drucker excels in, you know, I just was not interested in Kurt Swan. And he was the main Superman artist, so I just got bored with it and quit reading comics. As far as working on Superman, once I got the job working on Superman, I was really excited because, you know, it's what I read as a kid, and to think that I was drawing the very comic that I enjoyed as a kid did sink in. You know, there was pressure not only for that, there was pressure because I really respected Jerry Ordway's art, and he was the lead Superman artist. So every time I would turn in a page, I would see a page he had just turned in that was 10 times as good, and I just, you know, there's pressure. And I'd looked at what Kurt Swan had done, and I looked what Jerry was doing, and I looked what Neil Adams had done, and I did my best. You know, that was the first series monthly book that I had penciled in a long time, and I was trying to get back, hit my stride in penciling again. I wasn't happy with the inks, and I tried inking it myself and fell behind on the deadline and just couldn't do it month after month. You know, so I was trying as hard as I could to do my best work, and I felt the deadlines, I just wasn't fast enough. I wasn't happy with the inks. I wasn't happy with the pencils because I just felt like I didn't have enough time to draw it the way I wanted to draw it. So it was, I remember it mainly as just a lot of pressure rather than a lot of fun.
Well, now let me ask you, as a penciler, you've worked with a lot of different writers. What kind of script do you prefer? Do you prefer something real tight, or do you prefer something that lets you play with the story a little bit?
I like the Marvel method where they give you a plot and you draw it the way you think it should be drawn, and then the writer writes the dialogue, as opposed to a finished script that says an upshot here of Spider-Man and a close-up here and 5 panels on this page and 12 panels on this page. And, you know, I don't like all that much minutiae from the writer. I just want the story from the writer and let me collaborate with him instead of just being his drawing hand, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, we were going to get around to it eventually. And speaking of tight scripting, I know that Chris Claremont is notorious for doing tight scripts. And you knew we were going to get to New Mutants, right?
Yeah.
I put it off as long as I could. And I I know that you've probably, you know, gone over this about as many times as you'd care to, but if you could just indulge me one more time and just kind of tell me, you know, how did you get involved in that project?
I'll try to think of something new to say, but it's pretty hard after all these years.
It hasn't changed much.
For a lot of people, though, I mean, it's you know, a lot of people probably haven't heard it.
I haven't heard it. It's all new to me.
Okay, well, you were just talking about scripting. Let me just start out by saying that Chris writes in a very, his way. He's a writer who gives you way more than you need, in the sense that he's just bursting with ideas, and his scripts are even his plots are just page after page after page. He gives you like 50 pages worth of material to squeeze into a 22-page comic, which, as a beginning penciler, when I did New Mutants, I had very little experience on was that my first series, maybe? I think, my first regular monthly book. And it was very difficult for me to know what to leave out, because there's no way I could put everything in that he was asking for. I would have had 20 panels per page, you know, and he expected me to leave stuff out, but then that was making me the story editor, kind of, and it was tough. I didn't want to insult him by cutting out something that he might really want me to have put in there, but like I said, I couldn't put in everything, so I was never real comfortable working with Chris because he just gave me too much, and then also he just loves to write dialogue and covered up so much of my drawing with his word balloons, and so, you know, he wasn't my favorite writer to work with just for those simple reasons. It has nothing to do with me not liking his writing. I think he's a good writer. It's just it was difficult for me as a penciler to work with him. But the way I got into New Mutants, I did a fill-in. I was the artist for some reason that did a lot of fill-ins. I was always around, and they never really were offering me a series the way most people seem to get offered series. They didn't offer me that many series, so I just was around and always looking for a fill-in to do. And I did a fill-in on the X-Men. Jim Sherman penciled X-Men 151 and got behind on the deadline, and they needed someone to finish up the pencils and ink the last few pages, or the last half of the book or something. And Joe Rubenstein inked some pages, but I finished up all of his pencils and inked the last two pages, I think, and various parts of other pages, maybe. I forget now. And they liked that, and they said, well, that was great. We need somebody for the next issue, because I don't know what happened to Jim, if he was sick or he got another job or what, but they needed somebody to pencil the next issue. So I penciled the next issue, didn't have time to ink it, so Rubenstein inked it. But they liked it enough that they said, well, why don't you, you know, be the regular penciler on the X-Men? And, you know, at that time, the X-Men was pretty much just another comic. I don't think it had yet. I mean, it was a good comic that people wanted to do, but it wasn't the comic to work on. And I was excited about it, and they thought I could do it, but they didn't really put that much thought into picking the best person they could find. I was just handy, and I was good enough. And they said, well, why don't you be regular penciler on the X-Men? I said, okay. And then they said, or Chris has got this other idea of a younger team of X-Men, and I think we're going to do a spinoff of the X-Men, and you could get on the ground floor with that and be a co-creator. Which would you rather do? I said, ooh, tough decision, because I'd like to do the X-Men. You know, Neil Adams had drawn the X-Men, and I was a huge Neil Adams fan, and that's all I was thinking about was, I'd really like to draw the X-Men, but it probably would be a good career move to co-create a series, and, you know, that could be exciting. That's how many times am I going to get a chance to do that? And so I finally decided to take the New Mutants job, and I don't remember who took over the X-Men at that time, but I went with the New Mutants.
Now, a lot of people have a lot of fond memories of the, you know, of the New Mutants when it originally first came out. And a lot of people don't realize you started out behind schedule, I believe, and you only did the special, what, the first three issues, and then you were pretty much gone except for inking a few more after that?
Yeah, it was, again, my dream job, you would think, but it was a nightmare because I started the first issue. I was about 10 pages at the most into the first issue, and suddenly Marvel had started doing these graphic novel. They started up their graphic novel line, and they needed material to turn into graphic novels. And so all of a sudden they were saying, hey, let's make the New Mutants a graphic novel instead of starting it as a series, and then we can do the series after the graphic novel. Great. So let's make it a graphic novel. So Chris had, you know, his scripts were 50 pages worth of material anyway, no problem turning that into a graphic novel instead of a 22-page comic. And the only problem was the graphic novels were on a different schedule than the monthly comics. And so instead of being 3 months ahead of schedule, we were a month behind schedule. So I had to rush to pencil 50 pages. And then they were going to give the inks away to a different inker because the deadline was just running up on us. And I didn't want somebody else to ink it. I wanted to ink it myself. And they suggested an inker I didn't like. And I said, I've got to ink this myself. And right at that time, I happened to get married and was going on my honeymoon. And I had the option of giving it away to another inker or inking it on my honeymoon. And so I ended up inking through my honeymoon. And as soon as I got off the graphic novel, got it finished, racing through it as fast as I could possibly ink it, you know, hardly one of my best ink jobs. I was just literally doing it as fast as I could over loose pencils because, you know, I also had to rush the pencils in order to give myself time to ink it. So it was hardly, you know, my best effort. It was just how much can you do by next month? You know, how good a job can you do by next month, not how good a job can you do. And then as soon as I finished it, I had to jump on the first issue, and I gave them a list of 10 inkers I'd like to work with. The 10th one, I could only think of 9. So I was scrambling all over, looking at comics, trying to come up with a 10th name, finally came up with a 10th name, Mike Gustavich. And, of course, that's who I got, because all the other ones were busy. And Mike was very inexperienced at that time, just starting his career. Might have been his first job at Marvel. I think he had done some independent comic before then is where I saw him. And he didn't know what to do with my pencils. You know, I've talked about how tough my pencils are to ink, evidently, and he was struggling with it. And so I wasn't really happy with his inks. Now, you know, I don't mean this to insult Mike, because he's since improved a lot and become a very good artist, but like I say, this was one of his first jobs. It was one of my first jobs, and it was tough. And so then I started trying to figure out some way to make it better. I just was too rushed on the pencils to do what I considered penciling that I was happy with. And so I got the idea that if I switched over to inking, I could control the look of the book more, whoever was penciling it, because my inking was pretty dominating. And so I said, let me switch over to the inks and get somebody else to pencil it. And so they pulled in Sal Buscema, who was penciling, I think, 3 books a month at the time. And to him, it was just another assignment. And he was just knocking, you know, pages out like his brother, 5 pages a day. And it was breakdowns. And I was happy for a month or two doing that. Sometimes I would totally redraw a panel to get it to look the way I thought it should look, and I'm sure Sal didn't appreciate that, and I didn't feel good doing that, but, you know, I really wanted it to look what I considered it, the way it needed to look, and it was frustrating. And after a couple issues of that, Marvel threw Team America into the book, and I said, God, do I want to be drawing Team America, and do I want to just become, I know, it's funny, isn't it? Do I want to become just, you know, Sal Buscema's inker? Is this where I want my career to go? And, you know, I just was miserable. And so I, you know, reluctantly said, I want to quit. And the editor, Louise Simonson, begged me to stay on the book. She said, you're crazy. You really, this is bad for your career. You should stay on this book. And I was just too miserable. I was doing work that I thought was lousy work, and I just couldn't stand it. So I left the book.
Now, why did you choose to go to inking as opposed to, let's say, skipping the Team America one, letting somebody else do that, getting your feet underneath you, and then just continuing? Let's say, do a fill-in issue.
Oh, you know, it sounds so simple. They said, oh, you know, retrospect, months later, they said, oh, we would have given you a different inker, but they didn't offer that at the time. You know, there were no other inkers at the time. Doing a fill-in wasn't an option. There was just none of those possibilities were on anybody's lips at the time. It was all in retrospect. They said, oh, well, you should have done a fill-in. But, you know, no one was offering a fill-in at the time. And I can't describe to you how depressed and just unhappy I was working on that series.
Now, what was your contribution to the series? Did you design the characters mainly? Did you help come up with the personalities? Or was that kind of already in place when you were approached for the series?
They were very generous calling me a co-creator. I mean, I did do some things, but Chris had already come up with the main characters and their names and their basic personalities, the direction he wanted the series to go in. But he and I sat down and talked about it and discussed his ideas and what I thought about them and if I had any different directions I wanted to go. I really liked the idea of it being a school, of focusing the stories around the school instead of just having them end up being another superhero team racing around the universe, which, of course, they ended up being. So I thought I really liked the idea of the school uniforms. We talked about having individual uniforms for them, and I did a couple of sketches you might have seen of different uniforms, but I really wanted a team uniform, a school uniform. I came up with the individual looks for them. Like, Chris had come up with Rain being, I think she was originally Iranian, and then he changed her to Scottish, and I had her as a redhead, I believe, but I think her height was probably up to me. It was my idea of, you know, what body type she had and what she specifically looked like. So I came up with the visualization of the characters, and like Sunspot, we tossed around making like a hulkish, huge character at first, and ended up having him keep his size and just turn into the negative black shape, and, you know, all the visual stuff pretty much I contributed. But Chris had already pretty much nailed down the characters before they even approached me.
Did you keep track of the characters over the years?
No.
No.
When I left the book, I left the book. I didn't read anything after I looked at Bill Sienkiewicz's stuff after I left, and I said, whoa, that's different. And, you know, I liked a lot of what Bill did, but these were my children pretty much, and to me, he wasn't drawing my children. So I pretty quickly lost interest and just moved on.
Well, I know that periodically you came back to the title to work on individual issues. I'm the guy who bought all the pages from New Mutants Annual 4 from you about 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I sent you a lot of money.
Not enough.
Well, he's still collecting. He's still collecting the rest of those pages. So if you can find them before he does,
oh god,
I'm only missing.
I can't even afford to buy my own work.
I think I'm missing like 20 of the pages. I've got almost all of them, so
wow,
I'm getting close. Now you
went. It was like coming back to the New Mutants was like any other job for me. Pretty much, they offered it to me, and it's a job, and I took it to keep busy, not because oh boy, I got to get back to the New Mutants.
Last question on the New Mutants. Would you like to have another crack at it to just pencil it one more time?
Yeah, sure. The thing is, penciling styles have changed, and the editors are young editors for the most part who have a different idea of what a page should look like than I do because of the generational difference probably, and they expect pretty much what Al Rio's giving them, which is not the way I would like to draw them. I would draw them less ornately. By that, I mean, there's so many tiny little figures everywhere and so many ornate backgrounds. It's just not the kind of art. Today's comics are just more illustration than I like for story. I think all that illustration slows down the story, because you want to spend so much time looking at each panel because there's so much going on in each panel. It's just not the work that I would want to do all the time. I would like to do it like a fill-in or maybe a three-issue miniseries or something, but I wouldn't want to do a monthly book in today's comic world, I don't think.
You mentioned that you would rather be, you enjoyed sci-fi and like romance and stuff like that a little bit more than the superhero. You did a few issues of the Marvel Star Wars run, as you mentioned earlier. What was that experience like for you?
That was a lot of fun at first, mainly because, I tell you, my career has been frustrating. It's one series of frustrations after another. It started out, who wouldn't want to draw Star Wars, right? That was great. I couldn't believe I got a chance to draw Star Wars. And again, that happened because I did a fill-in for, what did I do? I inked a fill-in over somebody, I forget who, and they said, well, we need a penciler next issue, and I had just gotten off of the New Mutants, I think, so they knew I could draw, and they said, you want a pencil, a fill-in? And I said, sure, can I ink it too? And they said, sure. And so I pencil and inked a job, and then they said, well, that's good, you want to be the regular penciler? And I said, great. And the only problem is, they said, Tom Palmer's the regular inker. I said, how's that a problem? He's my favorite inker. And they said, well, he only wants to ink over breakdowns. And I said, well, great, I'll do breakdowns because I'd like to see what he does with my pencils. You know, wonderful. Yeah. And the problem became the writing. It went through a period where the stories, not every issue, because we did the one issue, was it 85, I think, or 86, was a really good story, but that was written by a guest writer. The regular writer on the story, on the book, was writing stories that became just kind of lame and not much fun for me to draw. And I know Tom Palmer must have been bored with the inking. And again, after a few issues, it just got to be not at all what I wanted to do. I just was not enjoying it.
Yeah. This was around 1984. So, I mean, Return of the Jedi just kind of come out the year before. So Star Wars was still pretty hot. I mean, it's kind of hot now, but it was still fresh and new then. I mean, were you really into Star Wars yourself?
When the first Star Wars movie came out, they gave a special screening or free tickets or something to all the Marvel staff. We all went together to watch Star Wars. Wow. at the theater when it first opened. And we were all just blown away. We just loved it. And was I a Star Wars fan? I was much a fan of it as I was of anything else in fantasy and sci-fi and that genre. And I'm a humor guy. You know, I got into comics because my friend wanted me to, and I got rejected. And I said, well, oh yeah, I can draw comics. And so I, you know, taught myself how to do it. And then after I'd spent 5 years teaching myself how to do it, I figured I might as well stay in and do it. And, I was getting steady work, making good money, and I figured, you know, fine, I'll do this. But my heart has never really been in it. You know, it's not where I really wanted to be. So, yeah, I liked Star Wars, but I would have rather been doing humor.
Well, I got one final question for you, Bob. Now, you're working on the New Mutants now. Do you know what your next project's going to be? Do you have anything lined up?
No, this is going to be a five-issue miniseries, and I've only finished the first issue. And unless the business has changed a lot since I was in it before, they don't generally book you months and months in advance unless you're one of the top in-demand artists, which I'm not. So I have no idea what I'm doing after this as far as comics go, if anything. I might end up doing something else after this, might not. I'm happy teaching and doing commissions and trying to do children's books. I'm not looking to get into comics again, which, you know, depending on the project, I'm happy to do more comics, but I really don't know what's going to happen after this.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for two things. Number one, for taking the time out of your, I know right now it's like 10 o'clock at night your time, so I do appreciate you taking some time out of your evening to talk with us, and I want to thank you, too, for all the joy you gave me during the 80s when I started reading comics, and thank you for all of that.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm just thrilled that you enjoyed my work and got some pleasure from it. And you don't maybe realize how much gratification that gives me and other artists to know that we're entertaining people and doing things that are memorable to people. I mean, I've had people come up to me and say, you know, New Mutants was maybe the first comic they ever read or something like that, and they've remembered a job I did for 20 years, and it really had an impact on them, and you know, it makes me feel great. So, you know, I'm very flattered and honored.
I can still remember being at the being in the grocery store and seeing New Mutants annual New Mutants number one, and just being blown away and picking that up. So that's still a very strong memory with me. So
well, great. I hope I didn't spoil it by telling you the behind the scenes stuff.
No. Actually, I think that the stories behind all this makes it a lot more interesting for me as a reader to know what was going on at the time. So thank you for your time, Bob. I appreciate it. And we wish you nothing but luck in the future. And if you do have anything coming up, you know, please do let us know so we can, you know, promote it on the website.
Sure. I'd be glad to.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Nice talking to you.
All right.
You have a good evening.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.